Welcome to RC Hangar Time, a podcast dedicated to the radio-controlled aviation hobby, where each week, our hosts discuss everything from airplanes to helicopters and everything in between.
All right, this is episode number 58 of RC Hangar Time. So I got CPO with us tonight. What's going on, CPO? What have you been up to?
Dude, how's it going?
Pretty good.
It's been an interesting and busy week. I was out of town last week for about half the week and have had a lot of big work stuff happening. But let's see, in the hobby, I've been working on my Apollo 50. Still chugging away on that. Actually, on that build, I'm almost done, and I was honestly hoping to get done with it this weekend. And then I get to mounting up the motor, which is the very last thing. I like save that for the very end. I want to mount the motor and then put the, you know, button down the electronics, got all the servos in and all that. But I didn't realize until today that the motor mount that comes with the Apollo 50, which is a really nice aluminum motor mount, apparently it must be designed for a little bit bigger motor than what I'm putting on it. I'm putting on a Rimfire 46, and the mounting screw holes, the hole-to-hole dimensions are like 19 millimeters, and on the motor mount, they're a little bit, you know, wider than that, like, I don't know, 25 millimeters, something like that. So anyway, the motor doesn't fit the motor mount. So turns out Tower Hobbies sells a motor mount that's designed, you know, for the size motor I have. So yeah. I think it's like $15. So I'm just going to order a new motor mount, but it kind of stalled me a little bit. I was expecting to get the maybe not maiden this weekend because I haven't had a chance to get to the field. But I thought maybe I'd get it built, and then I didn't even think about the motor mount not matching with my motor. So
yeah.
Yeah, it sucks, but I'm kind of a slow, meticulous builder anyway. So you know, waiting another few days or a week doesn't really matter to me that much. I have plenty going on.
Yeah, I lose patience by then waiting on stuff. If I don't have something, yeah. It's like, and I'm in the middle of building, it's like I'll stop everything and run to the hobby shop and do whatever I can to get what I need.
Yeah, I mean, it would be cool if I had a Tower Hobbies down the road that I could just run into. I would drop everything and go, you know, pick up whatever parts I need, but I don't have a hobby shop near me that has that type of stuff that I need. I mean, we've got a couple of chain shops, you know, smaller chain shops like there's a hobby town, you know, somewhere up about 45 minutes away from here, but they don't have anything that I'm usually looking for, because usually when I need something, it's like something very specific.
Yeah.
So I give up even trying, but you know, people hate it when I do build videos because you know, they'll try and follow along with me and we'll start together, but it'll take me 6 months to get through the build and they want to do it in like 2 weeks, and they just, you know, it sucks, but I'm a patient builder.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else do I have going on? I did start the video for, I don't know if you, you caught it. You were on the Heli Hangout on Friday, but I've got a Protos SLT that I'm checking out. So I'm getting some video put together on that, which is kind of cool. I like it, and I'll get that out this week if I can find the time to edit the video. Probably the coolest thing I did this weekend, though, was I got to actually do a full-scale flight lesson.
Nice.
My wife got me one for my birthday, which just happened a couple of weeks ago, and it was the coolest thing. I've been wanting to go out and take a flight lesson forever, and it was one of those introductory, like, you know, I think I logged 40 minutes of actual flight time, but it was just so cool to get, you know, in the cockpit of a full scale. It was a Cessna, I think, like 172 or something, four seater, and you know, just get up there and the instructor, you know, he takes off and says, okay, you've got it. And I'm like, okay. So, I mean, the cool thing is all of my RC stuff, the principles of flight, I already understand. You know, I understand how ailerons work and rudder and, you know, all of that, you know, stuff. So It felt really natural. A little bit awkward to not be using my thumbs to fly, but but it was really cool and a beautiful day for it. Not a cloud in the sky. And we flew around like around 3,000 feet for the most part. Practiced some ascents and descents, and you know, left turns and right turns. Just some really simple stuff. The problem is, it was so awesome, but yet, if I want to continue and actually, you know, take flight lessons and work on getting my full scale private pilot's license, it's so expensive.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I really want to do it. My wife's like, no, no way. I mean, it is expensive.
Yes, it is.
So I'm really torn emotionally. I'm torn on this because I almost wish I didn't take the full scale flight, so I wouldn't be so excited knowing that I can't afford to continue. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. In the meantime, I'm going to work on, you know, my FPV hobby side of things and get that, you know, flight sensation as best I can. But
right. So I see that you got some stuff from Ready-Made RC.
It's not here yet. It's on the way.
Oh, okay.
I got the shipping notification over the weekend, but I think I expect it to show up Tuesday. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've got a couple things coming. I'm going to be building a 250 size racer quad, and the other thing I have coming with that, they've got a 5.8 gigahertz. Like a all-in-one starter package for FPV.
Yep.
And it's got the receiver, the transmitter, and I got the monitor with a tripod and all that stuff. So that's what I have coming to me first. I'm not sure if I have actually any of the quad stuff coming in this particular shipment, but in the next couple of weeks, tops, I'll have motors and ESCs and a quad frame. But I think this first shipment's going to have the FPV kit, which I'm really excited. And I think I'm going to throw that like on my Bixler or my tricopter or something just to play with it.
Yeah.
Right away. And it's got the Immersion RC 600 milliwatt video transmitter. So it should be the really good one.
Yep. Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff.
For sure.
So, you, what have you been up to? I saw a couple of videos that you posted playing around.
Yeah, I've been doing some FPV racing. Well, practice racing. Me and my buddy went out yesterday, and we put back-to-back packs in 4 hours, just nonstop flying for 4 hours.
Wow.
Flying out, doing FPV yesterday morning. Started off a bit windy and cold, but by the time it was, you know, 11 or 12 o'clock, wind had died down, sun was out, and it turned out to be a nice day, and we just kept going. I mean, it was a lot of fun. We were just constantly charging batteries and flying batteries and getting a lot of flight time in on the 250 quad.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that thing rips, man. It was really fast and it was a lot of fun.
So I know you you mounted your GoPro on top to get that video footage.
Right.
And we talked about on the Facebook group that, you know, it still didn't seem to change how well it flew. But did you, you know, balance it, or did you just say, let the flight controller figure it out? I'm just going to strap this thing on there.
No, I balanced it out with the battery and the receiver and everything. So I made sure that everything balanced out perfectly for the CG with the GoPro on there before I took it up and flew it.
Okay. I was curious if it was just kind of like a random ad hoc, throw it on and just pray for the best.
No, it started out as kind of a joke throwing the GoPro up there because I know it's so big and bulky and not very aerodynamic. So I was just kind of started out as a joke. I was like, oh, I'm just going to hover with it, get a little bit of video, then take it off and race. But once I flew it with it, I had no idea it was even there when I was flying. And I was really booking it going down these straightaways. I mean, it was probably hitting 40, 50 miles an hour easily going down these straightaways, even with the GoPro on it. So it handled it like a champ. Like it was not even there. And we were this little racetrack. I posted some pictures and videos in the RC Hangar Time group on Facebook of where we were racing. And we were timing ourselves, and I was getting down to like 25 second laps on this racetrack that we had made.
So wow.
I can only imagine how much faster I'd be once I get the Mobius on there.
Oh, no doubt.
Because that'll probably reduce a little bit of drag.
How heavy is that GoPro? What, 50, 60? I don't know. I don't even know how heavy those things are. But yeah, you'll.
I don't know either.
Did you fly it without the GoPro on the same day just to see if you felt a difference?
I didn't. Okay. I didn't want to take everything out and try to readjust for the CG and everything, so I just kept it on there and kept flying with it.
What are you charging batteries with out at the field like that when you're going all day?
I just got a small high-tech charger that I just connect to my car.
Oh, okay.
These are only 1,300 milliamp batteries, so it only takes me about 15, 20 minutes to charge them.
Nice.
Yeah, so that thing's a lot of fun, and that's really addicting. Even my buddy, what I went with, we both have Fat Shark goggles on 5.8, and we were both able to get up at the same time and fly with each other and race around with each other at the same time while doing FPV.
Cool. No ghosting or anything like that?
Nope. We didn't have a single problem. I mean, we ran into a few glitches here and there, just some lines across the screen, but that was the worst it got. I mean, nothing to impair the vision in the goggles or anything. So I'm excited that we were able to test that out as well, to start with the FPV racing and start adding more people in and not worry about having too many troubles with the with the frequency hopping and all that.
Right.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Tell you what, it's been awfully inspiring watching you post those videos and talk about your racers. There's no doubt in my mind that I will be running one of those very soon. And I've seen a couple other people who are in the hobby who have suddenly started to find an interest in FPV racing. So I think there's going to be a lot of new folks running around with 250 size quads here pretty soon.
Yeah, after Friday's heli hangout that you had, and then my videos and pictures that I posted in the RC Hangar Time group on Facebook, there was a lot of guys that, Derek posted saying, "You FPV racers, you're making me want to get one. I'm going to be in trouble now." And then there's a few other people saying, "Yeah, I've got to get in on this too." So it's really a whole new aspect of the hobby. I mean, it's really addicting. I've been totally just like fully submerged into it now. And it's like, I haven't even looked at my helis lately or my airplanes or anything. It's just like, oh, I need to go fly this, or I need to work on this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's it's crazy. And the aircraft itself is not expensive at all to get into. I mean, the expense is the FPV gear,
right?
But once you've got that, you're pretty much set. But in the grand scheme of financial reality in the hobby, it's pretty much on the low end, but high end on the fun side, which is, it's a great combination.
Yeah, for sure. It's a lot more affordable than flying helis, and that's what me and my buddy were talking about, because he's a heli pilot too. We fly together at our local field, and he's like saying, "Man, I'm into this quad for, $160, $200. If I crash my heli, I mean, that's $200 almost just in blades. And if I crash this thing, it's like $1 worth of props." So
that's right. It's
definitely a different aspect. And, these little 250 quads, they ain't no joke. They're a lot of fun. When I first saw them, I was like, nah, these can't be that fun. But now look at me. I've got a 250 quad, and I just got a new 450 frame, 500 millimeter frame in on Friday with another Naze 32 that I'll be building for another FPV racer for like a 450 class.
Nice.
Yeah, so
it's good stuff, man.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Cool. What else? Anything?
That's about it for me this week. But I haven't done much else, just work and how that goes.
Yeah, I hear you there. But what's anything exciting happening on the Facebook group? Have you checked that out lately?
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of things going on. There's so much going on in there lately. It's really exciting to see the activity going on and the new members joining. I mean, basically daily we get new members joining in, so it's awesome. So many to pick from, but I'll give Derek Townsend a shout out this week. He posted something up today that caught my interest. That was kind of funny. He says, "The duct tape of the RC world," and he posts a picture of Shugu, CA, and Loctite. I was like, that's nice. That's pretty smart.
Yeah, it's true though. That's like the, with those three things, that's like RC things.
Yeah, I would just add one more thing to that list, and that would be 3M tape.
Yeah, if you, of course, we could always add in Velcro, but
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, he's got epoxy on there. That's funny. That's hilarious stuff.
Yeah, but other than that, I mean, there's a lot of other posts in there. A lot of good stuff going on in the group. It's a lot of fun to hang out. I mean, and if you want to see the video that I'm talking about that from my 250 quad, it's in there as well.
Yeah,
how about you?
I've been watching. You know, there's, you know, Christopher Loesch. It looks like he's got some really cool toys to play with. I've been kind of watching his pictures post up. And then Mike Castillo's working on this U.S. Air Force fighter that, you know, is looking pretty good. So there's all kinds of cool stuff happening in there. I actually got into a conversation on offline on instant messaging on Facebook with somebody from the group earlier today. And surprisingly, I don't think everybody in the group actually listens to the show. So I thought it was interesting, though, that that we probably have more people in the group that just hang out and want to hang out with cool people that maybe don't even realize that there's a a podcast that goes along with it. So we got to figure out how to get people listening from the group.
Right.
But yeah, there's just a ton of people in there just posting on a regular basis, which is really cool.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen that you you helped out a fellow RC Hangar Time Flight Club member today.
Yeah, there was I was in in the Flight Club page. There was a post from Rick Rivers that was basically he got this FMS sort of a it's a generic sort of a Chinese knockoff FHSS, which is a Futaba protocol branded radio, and I've seen these before. And they're kind of like the super low end. I think you can buy them, you know, with a transmitter and a receiver for like $35 or $40. But mm-hmm. The problem is there's no information about how to use it. And so he was just having some trouble getting his receiver bound. And then also he was having trouble getting his channel assignments right. So I spent some time with him in the on the Facebook page. Basically, we had a conversation via comments back and forth, try this, do this, look at this, and he ended up getting it up and running. But come to find out, this was set by default to mode 1, which was throwing him off because he's a mode 2 pilot. So when he was thinking he was moving the throttle, he was really moving the rudder, you know, that kind of stuff. and then there was another switch that would let it choose between fixed wing or delta. Which, you know, the Delta obviously is going to add in some mixing that he wasn't expecting. So once we got him sorted out on the fixed wing and the mode selections, then after that, it was just a matter of, you know, figuring out where the throttle, where the rudder, where the aileron is and all that good stuff. So, yeah, he got it up and running. So I'm excited to see what he does with it now.
Yeah,
I don't know what he's putting it into.
Yeah, that's what the Flight Club's all about. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's nice to be able to help somebody too. It's hard sometimes to do it virtually, but I always enjoy trying to figure out how to help somebody solve a problem if they're genuinely needing help and are willing to take advice and try things. I'm all down for helping people out.
Yeah, for sure. I've helped a few people out from the group as well. A few people have had some heli troubles, and you know, I've given them my phone number and they've called me, and we spent, you know, sometimes it's 15 minutes, sometimes it's an hour on the phone troubleshooting problems with their heli and, you know, able to get it up and going. And it's awesome. They come back and say, oh, it's working great. Thanks for all your help. You know, it's good to be able to give back and help out like that when you can.
Yeah, no doubt. And I've certainly leaned on my share of people to help me before. So try to give back wherever I can.
Oh, yeah. Where would we be without the internet, right?
Oh, dude, I wouldn't be in the hobby without the internet. I would have survived by myself. No way.
Nope.
I wouldn't have got past my first build.
Yep. Every time it seems like I have to Google something, especially with these quads, man. Every time it's like, and I'm just learning the NAS 32 on my own. I haven't gone to anybody for help or anything, you know, and I'm trying to figure it out. It's like, well, I'll just Google that. And then I have the answer. It's like, okay, awesome.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I couldn't do it without Google.
Google and YouTube. Those are my two best friends in the hobby.
For sure.
Well, now Search RC. I'll put a little plug in because I try and use Search RC first because I find out I get quicker results.
Yeah.
Without a lot of garbage, but yeah, it's all out there. It's a matter of finding a needle in a needle stack.
Yeah, there's so much information out there. It gets tough sometimes.
Indeed.
Awesome. Anything else?
No. Let's move on.
Yeah, should we move on to the main topic?
Let's do it.
All right.
This episode of RC Hangar Time is brought to you by SimpleCopter.com, makers of simple, rugged, and unique multi-rotor frames. Are you tired of having to replace an entire frame when you only break an arm? Or are you done with having a frame that looks like everyone else's? Then you need to go to Matt Hall's SimpleCopter.com. You'll find unique tricopter and quadcopter frames. They're simple, rugged, for flyers of all skill levels. And being that they're made up from wood, you can paint them to any color you choose. And they're cheap and easy to fix as well. So go to www.simplecopter.com right now and order your new frame today.
So this week, this show is called Chase and Tell. This week, me and CPR are going to go over everything, the basic tell stuff for a heli. We're going to go through, how to mechanically set it up right, how to troubleshoot problems, talk about, what kind of tail wags you're getting and how to fix that with proper gains and proper setups for getting that tail straight. Because if you don't have a good tail on a heli, you can't fly that thing at all. I mean, especially if you're going to do any kind of 3D stuff. If you got any kind of tail wag or if your tail's not holding, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. If the tail gives out on you, I mean, I've seen tails just pirouette to the ground. And if you don't know how to auto it down, you're pretty much screwed. You know what I mean? I had that happen to my NX4. I had one of the tail grips actually just shoot right off in the air on me. And it was pretty crazy.
That messes your tail authority, won't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. When you have the auto and the tail's just sitting there spinning around at 360 degrees per half a second, it's pretty scary. So, what to look for and that kind of stuff. So you want to go ahead and start us off and talk about the basics of the proper setups and all that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we'll go through. I don't have any really laid out bullet points, but we'll just talk through. I'll talk through what I do to set up helis, tails, and what I know, and we'll just go from there. But the one thing I did want to say is, I've heard it said, and I believe it makes perfect sense. Is the most confidence robbing thing you can do in learning to fly a helicopter is have a really poorly set up tail. It seems like that the more locked in your tail is, the more competent and confident of a pilot you become. Do you think that's true?
For sure. Yeah. Like I was saying, if you don't have a good tail set up and if your tail's all over the place, yeah, you're not going to be flying at all. And you're not going to be confident in any kind of maneuver that you're going to put it into, because you're going to be wondering, well, is my tail going to hold? Is it going to blow out? Is it going to give on me? So if your tail's not set up and you don't have any trust in your tail, I think that that's the number one important thing about setting up a heli.
Nice. So I'll qualify this by saying, by no means am I an advanced pilot. I'm just learning 3D myself. I've been in the hobby for, almost 2 years now. It's coming up on 2 years here pretty soon. And I've built my fair share of helis and helped a lot of people with setting up their helis. But when it comes to the advanced stuff, that's where, I know a lot, but I don't have a lot of practice in flying it. So there's one thing about me that you'll find is I don't try and pretend like I know more than I do. So if I get in over my head in this discussion, I'm going to defer to you on some of the advanced stuff. But I did spend a lot of time with learning about proper tail setup, from a mechanical perspective. I spent a lot of time chatting on the phone with team pilots from various team sponsorships and, people who have a lot of time and money invested in this sort of thing, and even people that represent companies that really want to make sure the right information is getting out there. So I feel like I've got a really good handle over the last couple of years. But probably the most important thing I think in getting started is just let's go all the way back to the basics, right? Of, how your tail rotor should be set up. And I think some of the most confusing parts of a new pilot, a new builder, is understanding how the tail's supposed to work and what it's supposed to do. I've had people ask me for help. You know, my tail's acting up. I can't do it. And I look at I'm like, dude, send me a picture or something. Just let me look at it. Sometimes a picture's worth 1,000 words. I can tell exactly what's wrong by looking at it. And I've seen tail rotor blades on backwards, where they're for some reason. I think people are okay with the main rotor, understanding that there's the leading edge, and the leading edge is always forward, and so they. When you look at it from the top, they're kind of reversed, right? One is facing one way and the other's facing the opposite. But when people put on tail blades, sometimes they try and put them so that they match. So you end up with a leading edge, then a trailing edge, then a leading edge, then a trailing edge. And that's not going to work very well.
No. So what I learned on that was that, looking top down on the heli, always, 90% of the time for most helis, leading edge is going to go clockwise for the main rotors, and then the tail, they're going to go counterclockwise for the leading edge. So I always rotate the tail and make sure that everything's going the right direction and the tail blades are on correctly that way.
Yeah, that's
right.
But
I've seen that even with main blades. People will put them on backwards and one on the right way and then the one on the opposite way, and it's like, no, don't, that's not going to work.
And it's that little stuff that, is easily missed by somebody just getting started,
right,
that will totally ruin your day in trying to figure out what is. You can troubleshoot until the cows come home, but if you've got that simple thing, backwards, then it's going to be. So that's why when I'm trying to help people out, I'll be like, do you have a cell phone with a camera? Take a picture, do a video, something. Let me look at it, and I'll look at it and go, oh, well, there's your problem right there.
Mm-hmm.
But I it took me a while to figure out those little things too. So once you know it, you know it. But start there. Make sure your blades are on proper, and then you're right. You mentioned it, Mike. When you rotate the tail, almost every there are a few exceptions, very few exceptions. But for the most part, the tail will rotate if you're looking at it from the right side of the heli, and right side being pretend like you're in the cockpit, your right is your right and your left is your left. So you get out of the heli and you look at it, the right is always going to be that same right side, and your tail rotor is going to rotate in a counterclockwise direction. And the reason it does that is because it needs to push up into the downwash from the main rotor ahead. So that's going to generate more lift for those blades as they're rotating through. So that's why it actually rotates up into the downwash. So if it's going clockwise, then you're pushing with, you're actually going downwind with the downwash, which doesn't give you nearly as much benefit. So if you've got a belt, your belt's on, it's twisted the wrong direction if you're spinning that way. So make sure your tail rotor's spinning in the right direction.
Sure.
And then we get into the mechanical setup, right, of the linkage. So and there's one thing that I think is confusing, and I think there's a lot of misinformation out there lately because we have advanced so far with tail gyros and fly barless system. I think people pay less attention to good mechanical setup because the reality is your tail gyro is going to compensate for most of the stuff that you can do wrong on setting up mechanically. And what I'm talking about is, there's a question of whether or not you center the tail so that it's at neutral pitch, it's at zero pitch, at center rudder, or should you have it set for a little bit of positive pitch? And I think people will argue that, well, if I'm not flying in rate mode, then it doesn't matter. I'll just put it at neutral, and the gyro will keep up. And that's true, but it's not good on your electronics. Your gyro is going to be constantly working to hold your – because the torque from your main rotor is going to want to turn your heli tail. It's going to want to turn the nose of your helicopter to the left.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the torque. So your tail rotor is going to be trying to push it back toward your nose, back towards the right, to keep your tail straight. So if you do it mechanically, then your gyro doesn't have to work as hard. Your servo doesn't have to work as hard. You're not going to pull as many amps, and your system will be a lot happier in the long run. So I like to build in about, I think it ends up being about 7 to 8 degrees of positive pitch, and that is pitch that has the leading edge of the tail blade tilted towards the boom, which will push that nose back right to counter your torque for the main rotor. So do you build in that positive pitch, or are you one of the guys that does just a straight 0 degree pitch on the mechanical?
No, I go 0 degrees pitch, and you know, I was going to mention most flybarless systems now, they have pre-comp that you can add in, pitch pre-comp that you can add into the tail. So I just go ahead and add that in my flybarless unit.
Yeah, I mean it really is. I mean, I know we don't fly in rate mode these days. Very rarely. I mean, if you're flying, you know, maybe scale or something like that, you might fly rate mode to get that nice weather vaning effect, but it really is better on your overall system to go ahead and build in that little bit of pitch at neutral, and then you don't, your pre-comp, you know, you still need pre-comp for like you know, when you punch out or something, give it full throttle, you're going to need tail pre-comp to counter that. But yeah, I would always recommend trying to get a little bit of that positive pitch, and that's actually how I tune the tail and the heli. So once I get it all built, I put it into a hover, and then I flip the tail gyro into rate mode and get it out of ACVS, put it into rate mode, and then see if I've got any drifting one way or the other, and then, you know, I'll turn my gain down, you know, below like maybe 40 or so. I mean, you could turn it all the way off, but I mean, I kind of want a little bit of gain just for comfort and safety in doing the testing. I don't want, you know, complete no control. Mm. But I bump that tail gain down really low, and then put it into rate mode, and you'll see it drift one way or the other. Well, then you can do one of two things. You can trim it out with your transmitter trim, temporarily, to get it where it's even, and then land it, and then take a look at how much pitch you now have, you know, additional built in with that trim, and then zero your trim out, and then get it back to that spot mechanically by adjusting your tail linkage rod. But that's pretty much, I mean, what you want to do. And by the way, I'll qualify this for people that may be confused. You don't want to run actual trim, you know, transmitter trim on your tail. You want to do it mechanically, but it's a good way to kind of figure out where that mechanical point is, where it's at neutral. So that's what I'll do, is I'll get it to where when I flip it into rate mode, the tail will still hold exactly where it is, and then I'll know mechanically I'm where I want to be.
Yes. And then I'll do the same. Yeah, I do the same. I go into rate mode, I lift it up into a hover, see which way it's drifting, but then I'll bring it down instantly if it's drifting left or right, and then I'll just adjust the tail linkage and then do it again. It's a very tedious process, but it definitely helps make sure that you're 100% mechanically set up in rate mode, you know, with no gyro at all. So I do the same.
Yeah. And that's, you know, we spend a lot of time preaching, you know, get your servos 90'd perfectly, your, you know, tail control rod should be at exactly 90 to your servo, and then we never set the pitch of the blades so that they're in the optimum position at 90. So we go through, you know, a large majority, 90, we get 90% of it just right, and then we let that last little bit go and figure, oh well, the gyro will keep up with it. I mean, so that's the first point. And by the way, when we're talking about tuning the tail, it's probably a good idea to mention you should always tune your tail, particularly when you start doing some more advanced flight tuning, like pre-comp and you know pirouette compensation, all that stuff. Do it without your governor on your ESC or your flybarless on. You don't want to use a governor, because a governor can kind of screw with you, as far as making it feel like you've got some tail gain problems when you don't.
Yeah.
So rule that out. Get rid of the governor for all of this stuff to make your life easier. But
yeah, and definitely head speeds will change the way your tail reacts too.
Yes, yeah, and particularly when we start talking about gains, that all changes when you change head speeds. You need less gain. The higher head speed you have, the less gain you need,
mm-hmm.
Is a little bit confusing for a lot of people. I think they need more gain with more head speed, but it's the opposite. Let's see. So we got our tail rotor at the right pitch at neutral. We've done all that mechanically through our servo arm and our linkage rod. And then the next thing would be, I guess, what I usually focus on is the endpoints of the travel, right? So the challenge here is when you set your tail rotor pitch at neutral, at zero, you're generally almost always in most helis right in the middle of the pitch slider, right? So you can move left. I'll use a number, just arbitrary. Now you can move left, 100 millimeters, and then you can move right 100 millimeters because it's right in the middle of that slider. The problem is when you add in a little bit of pitch, you tend to move a little bit to one side of that slider. So now you can only go 80 on one side, but you've got 120 on the other side. So you have what you end up with is unequal stick travel on both sides. So you have the potential of pirouetting faster on one side than the other side. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So some people leave it that way, and I know a lot of people. I know a lot of really great pilots who just leave it that way, and they just know that it's going to pirouette faster to the left than to the right. But when I set up my helis, I actually figure out which one is the limiting side. So if side A is only going to go, my max travel is going to be 80 before I hit, and start binding mechanically, then I'll figure out, I'll get my 80 set in the gyro, and then I'll just go ahead over to the other side, the B side, and just set it to 80. Even though I can go further, I let the smallest amount of travel be my limit for both sides. That way, no matter which direction I move the stick, I get the same travel and the same distance of the pitch change, so it's consistent across the board.
Right.
And so, like I said, there are people that don't do that; they'll set it to the maximum, and you're fully within your rights to set that up. I just think it makes more sense to make it equal on either side.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I try to get mine as equal as I can, just by eyeballing. I don't get too crazy and measure everything out, but I try to make it just by eyeballing. If there's a noticeable difference from side to side, then I try to make it about the same.
Yeah, and a little bit of difference too. You probably will never notice in flight. We're getting into semantics and and derivatives of precision as we go through this, but
right.
Let's see. So I guess the next thing we should make sure that people understand is that their gyro is moving in the right direction, compensating correctly. So
yes,
that's confusing. Another key area. Yeah, where people and you'll know when it's wrong because the first time you spool up, the thing's going to start spinning out of control on you. And almost every email or question I get about, hey, when I spool up the heli, it just starts spinning in circles. I'm like, check your gyro direction. Almost always, that's what it is. It's backwards.
Yeah.
And it's confusing, I think, because number one, I don't think people really understand which direction it's supposed to move, when they're looking at it. And some of the manuals aren't very clear. But basically, if you turn the helicopter so that the nose, let's say we're going to rotate the nose left, then your leading edge of your tail rotor blade is also going to tilt left.
Right.
And if the nose is going to move right, then the leading edge is going to move right, the front leading edge. So, right.
So I have an easy way of doing this as well.
Okay, let's hear it.
When I set up my gyro, I stand on the back of the helicopter looking at the tail itself. And I'll grab it, the tail, by like the tail fin or whatever, and I'll move the tail left, and I'm making sure that the pitch slider is moving right. And I'll do the same. I'll go right and then make sure the pitch slider is moving left. So it's basically opposite of whichever way you're moving the tail on the pitch slider is going.
Yeah, because the pitch slider often yeah, exactly. I'm going to make this more confusing. I'm just going to shut up right now. But yeah, and you'll do the same thing actually when you check. Now, my pre-flight check, I always do the same pre-flight check. I check, you know, my all my stick movements, you know, aileron and elevator and the rudder to make sure. And I'm always looking for that same exact thing. Does the rudder when I move the stick, is it moving in the right direction? So there's a very similar, and I'm looking at the tail pitch slider in that regard as well.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else? Did we get everything covered in the just mechanically how to get started with the setup before we start getting into gains and all that crap?
Yeah, I think we've covered pretty much everything on the mechanical setup. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think the key here is, and I know if there's a lot of new folks, rate mode seems to be about, you know, 2 years ago, and since then everything is heading hold, but
right.
There really is some value, and I use rate mode to set my my trim in the cyclic as well. So I don't fly, I never fly in rate mode. But I will use rate mode. In this case, we're talking about our tail. I'll use rate mode to get things set up where I know it's right, and then I'll flip it into to heading hold, and I'll never take it out of heading hold again.
Right. And rate mode is kind of just nowadays basically just like a setup procedure, like a setup tool.
Yeah, it just stinks that you have to, you know, go through so much to program your, you know, your transmitter to tell your gyro to go into rate mode. It'd be nice if they did have like a built-in sort of a setup thing.
Right.
It would simplify it. But, you know, I just put it on a switch and I'll take it up in heading hold where I know I've got good control over it. And then I'll flip the switch and see what it does. And then flip it back to heading hold, land it, like you said, make an adjustment. Or I'll just work with it with the trim and then bring it back down and then go make the final, you know, get it as close as I can to, you know, with one adjustment. But anyway, so yeah, 7 to 8 degrees, I think, is about the right amount of pitch to build into your tail blades. So,
right.
Let's talk about gains. You want to talk about gains?
Yeah. There's a lot to talk about with gains. I mean, gains can affect a lot of things. I mean, if you got a fast wag, you know, if the tail's just violently going back and forth, or if it's slow. You know, gain, that's a huge gain problem. So, you know, what I normally do when I first set up a heli and get it going, and I'm flying it around, it's really easy to tell if, you know, oh, okay, if it's a slow gain, if it's a slow wag, you know, I'll just bump up the gains a little bit or mess with the gains a little bit. But I like to get it into a tail down funnel. And, you know, whip it around pretty good in a tail down funnel or in a backwards hurricane where the tail's coming at you. Those maneuvers really put a lot of stress on the tail, and you can really tell, especially with a tail down funnel, I can really tell if, you know, if I'm flying around just doing some normal 3D and there's nothing going on with the tail, and then if I get it into a hurricane or a funnel, sometimes the tail does not like that at all, and it'll start doing some weird things and start getting some wags in a funnel, but it'll be flying, you know, you'll be flying it like normal until you get into a funnel. So, you know, I can make a few adjustments there as well with the gains.
Yeah. So
that's kind of what I do to test out my testing phases of gains, of what I need to do and what kind of adjustments I need to make. How about you?
Well, I'm not there yet, so definitely not tail down funnel or hurricane level, particularly for setting up the tail. That would be instant death for me. So I take a little bit more of a conservative approach. You know, I'll take it, and you know, the general rule of thumb that I hear a lot for setting the gains is, you know, get it up. You know, even if you're just, you know, hovering, don't feel like for those of you listening that you have to have all these advanced maneuvers down to be able to properly get things at least close.
Right.
And you'll know when you get to the point where you can fly a tail down funnel, you'll know that it's time for you to also think about maybe adjusting gains for that particular maneuver. But it just in general, the general rule of thumb is you want to get the tail, and you don't have to run it as high as you can go. But the way to find out your maximum tail gain, at least initially, is to take it up into a hover, you know, at a safe distance, give yourself a little bit of room, and start bumping that gain up until you get the fast. It's called a hunt, but it looks like the difference between a hunt and a wag, right? A wag tends to be a slow back and forth, like a wagging of a tail on a dog.
Right.
Whereas a hunt is more of this back and forth, kind of like a pecking chicken sort of a thing.
Yeah, it's very fast and very violent sometimes.
Yeah, so
if it's too high.
Yeah, you can definitely get into like a wag of death sort of a situation too. Start slowly, bump it up. You know, start. I think defaults. You know, let's just assume that a default gain might be 50. And it's going to vary from heli to heli and controller to controller. I mean, even on the same flybarless controller on two different helis is going to be different. So
yeah, and it'll vary from flybarless controllers too. Some are opposite. Some, you know, you're going to be down into the 30s, and some you're going to be into the 70s.
So. Exactly. Yeah. So figure out what's a good starting point for your particular setup, and then just start raising it that gain until you get that hunting, that really fast sort of oscillation, and then back it down a couple of points at a time until that goes away. And then basically what you found is your maximum tail gain for that particular head speed. So again, if you change head speed, let's say, you know, you're doing this in a like a hover head speed, and then you bump it up into idle up. Well, now you might have too much gain for the higher head speed. So you have to keep that in mind. But that's a good way to kind of find that maximum gain for the tail. Now, the opposite is true. If you've got that slow wag, then generally your gain is too low, and you need to raise it. It's kind of that in between heading hold and rate mode sort of a feel, where it's kind of holding but not really, and going back and forth. And you'll want to raise that gain until it locks in. And then again, most people just take it up until it starts that quick wag, and then bring it right back down again.
Right. Yeah, and another way of checking it too, if you know, rather than just a hover, if you can't get into those, you know, more difficult maneuvers like the funnels or whatever, a lot of people do just some high speed passes across the field. And you know, I've seen a lot of guys when they're first setting up a heli, they'll do a high speed pass, and you'll hear it coming, and the tail is just like wah 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 wah.
Yeah.
All the way down the runway.
Percussive sort of a thing. It's really weird.
And you'll get those too in the funnel too. So that, you know, those are things to look at. If you can't even make a high speed pass without that tail just whipping out like really crazy, then you know you're going to want to adjust those gains and get those down a little bit so that it's not hunting like that all the way down when in those high speed maneuvers. It's really interesting and really weird how those gains work.
It is, and I'm not even going to dare try and explain it.
It's
understandable. The control loops in those flybarless controllers are incredibly complicated. And I talked to some people. I know some people who know these systems intimately, like helped work with the engineers to program them, and they can tell me in and out, you know, and I spend hours on the phone talking with these guys about how the control loop works and everything, and I walk away from that phone call, I still have no idea, because it's all over my head. So I'm not even
your brain trying. Just mush.
Yeah, I'm like, so tell me what I need to know to fly. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, what else we got? We talked about getting the gain, figuring out the low gain and the high gain.
How about some punch outs and stuff to see if your tail's kicking out? That has a lot to do with back to the pre-comp stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was gonna say. Yep.
Right. Yeah. So I'll, you know, if you do a hard punch out, and I'll do that too, just to kind of check to see how my tail's holding once I first set up a heli. You know, because I don't sit there and, you know, sit on the field and, you know, that's my main move is doing pitch pumps.
That's my favorite move. That's the only one I'm good at.
Right. I used to be there, but, you know, I've moved past that since then. But, you know, that's a good thing. You know, just hit it hard and give it a hard pitch pump up and a nice stop, too. in those hard maneuvers, and you'll see if your tail's not holding, it'll kick out to the left most of the time. And you know that means that you need to add a little bit of pre-comp into that, because the tail's not keeping up with your head speed of the heli when you're doing that pitch pump.
Cool. Is it kick to the left or kick to the right? Now I'm trying to think through.
I'm trying to think too. I can't remember. It's one or the other.
I think maybe it kicks right. if it's not high enough. Either way, it'll kick, and you'll see it. And if you do a light, moderate powered punch out, and it holds nice and straight, and then you hit it full power, you'll definitely see it'll I don't know, anywhere from 5 to 20 degrees, that thing will kick, and then you'll know that you've got to go increase that.
Yeah, I've had some helis set up where I first did a pitch pump and it kicked out almost to a 90 degree angle. I mean, wow. I was tail in, and then it was all of a sudden side in. I'm like, okay, this is not good.
you were doing pitch pumps in rate mode,
right? Something like that. it was very interesting. Something was definitely not set up right on that heli, so I had to bring it down and make some the proper adjustments to get it going, add some pre-comp into it, and adjust a few gains, and all was good.
Yeah, and that's it starts to definitely get a little bit more complicated. Now we get into some of the advanced flybarless system programming parameters when we start talking about tail pre-comp and stuff like that. But I think, again, what I mentioned earlier is when you start getting to that level where you need to understand that stuff, it'll be pretty easy probably to start getting through that. But yeah. I know at my level, tail pre-comp is about as far as I can go where I feel knowledgeable. And it's in those punch-out sort of scenarios where I can go, okay, I can see my tail kicking. Let me fix that. But outside of that, I've been perfectly happy flying around, my light 3D and easy rolls and flips and some loops and stuff like that. Starting to get into a little bit of, I'll call them loosely hurricanes. They're more like tropical storms where I'm starting to get comfortable. But, of course, I say all that. I haven't even got my 700 to the field yet after I maidened it. So nice. It's even more comfortable with that big boy. But anyway.
I was going to mention the Icon has a really good setup for the pre-comp already. And it's really simple. It's a good starting point on the Icon, because that's what I fly on all my helis. You just go in when you're setting up the Icon, to going through the wizard, and there's just a checkbox that says, do you want to add in pre-comp or pitch pre-comp to the tail? And you check the mark, and it asks you which way the main rotor head is going. So if it's going clockwise, you just select clockwise, and that's it. And then it adds in, a few degrees, just to kind of a good general starting point, and you can try that out and see how it's holding. And usually, for the most part, I haven't had too many issues with it on my 550. It seems to hold pretty well with just the basic parameter, but you can go in and adjust how much you want it to adjust for and that kind of stuff. But you really don't need to play with that until you start getting into the harder maneuvers and it's not holding as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. And quite frankly, even a punch out with a little bit of kick isn't disastrous if you're just learning to fly. If you're just doing kind of sport flying or light 3D, you probably won't notice that at all.
Right.
During your normal, flight routines. It's only when you start really hitting it hard that you'll start to really see that stuff.
Unless mad pitch pumps are part of your flight routine.
That's true. If that's the only move you've got to rock it. I mean, let's be real.
Right. So tail end pitch pumps.
But you can't deny, I love the sound of a punch out, with a powerful heli, especially that 700 sounds amazing when I just give it full collective stick up and it just rockets to the sky. It is cool. So
right.
I'm going to keep that. That's my number one move right now.
Right. Hey, I do that a lot still on my 700, but it's nitro. And when you're tuning a 700 motor, you'll do a pitch pump and a climb out all the way up, and you listen to the motor, and then when you let off, you're listening to hear if the motor winds up. So
nice.
That's how you can tell if you're too rich or too lean, and if just depending on how it sounds on a long punch out where you're just climbing, and then when you let off. So I still do pitch pumps.
Nice. We've tapped out my knowledge as far as tuning on the advanced flight modes. Anything else that you want to bring up as far as the more advanced flight tuning? Or I do want to make sure we talk a little bit about like troubleshooting drift if you've got a drift problem or something. But you know, I just want to make sure if you had anything else on the advanced side to talk about before we push on.
There's not much. I think we've pretty much covered it as far as how to adjust for it. And if you're into those maneuvers and you see what your tail's doing, you're pretty much already aware of what you need to do, and it's kind of just a reaction based thing. So, you know, if it's doing this, oh okay, I need to do this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's kind of
complicated.
That when you need to know it, you'll start to know it.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
If you don't need it yet, it seems like it's so out of reach because you don't need it yet.
Right. Yeah. It's nothing to worry about until you're there. And if you're already there, then you already know, basically.
Yeah. Good point. So let's say somebody's got their heli set up and they've got some tail drift. It's not holding. What are some things that they can do just troubleshooting to look at?
If it's drifting, it sounds like it could be, you know, mechanical setup to me. It sounds like it's not either mechanically set up and the tail's not holding right.
Yeah, your gain could probably be too low. You know, if you're flirting on that edge of, you know, heading goal versus rate.
Yeah, if it's not even wagging and it's just drifting, yeah, it might be way too low.
The other thing that I've seen is if you've accidentally introduced a little bit of trim from your transmitter. The one thing I don't like about the easy access of all the trim buttons on the transmitters is they're also easy to bump.
Yeah.
And you know, if you bump that trim button a couple times or whatever, accidentally just carrying your transmitter around or whatever, you might introduce, which essentially the trim is to the to the fly wireless controller and the receiver. It just basically looks like stick input.
Right.
So it'll look like you're holding the stick a little bit to the left or to the right, and you'll see the tail drift because of that. And you'll be constantly fighting it by pushing the other way on the stick. But when you go back to center stick, if you've got trim in there, it's going to push. So I am starting to make a good habit at checking my trims periodically because I have found I've accidentally bumped the trim buttons and didn't even realize it, like just carrying the transmitter around or whatever. And actually one time, I'll admit this, even though I'll deny it if anybody asks me, but I actually set up a heli once with accidentally I had like four clicks of trim on the elevator. And I set up my swash, leveled it all with four clicks of trim in the elevator and didn't even know it.
Nice.
And it flew perfect. I caught it doing a trim flight where I put it into rate mode, and then I wanted to check the elevator trim by center of gravity. Right, I moved the battery forward or backward. I don't use trim for that. I just check it with by putting it in rate mode and then use center of gravity to adjust it.
Right,
and I adjusted that center of gravity like five times, and the thing was still pulling back on me. I'm like, what the hell is going on? I mean, it's perfect CG. And then I look down and I realize I had like four clicks of trim in there. So even though I had everything all center of gravity'd out, I've got this constant stick pressure, according to my receiver, pulling back.
Nice.
And I didn't notice it because, you know, the flight wireless controller can compensate. It's like, hey, you know, you want to stay flat, I'm going to keep you flat regardless of how stupid your setup is. And eventually I figured it out. But yeah, it's possible to bump that. So if you've got some drift issues, you can check that as well.
Yeah.
Another thing could be vibration. I've seen some weird tail stuff because of excessive vibration.
Yep, that's definitely a case.
I think these days most of the fly wireless controllers tend to prefer to be hard mounted and are more, I'll call it, vibration tolerant.
Yeah.
Than they used to be, but there's still opportunities for excessive vibration to cause some weird tail problems. And I've got a story about that as well. I had my 550 that I bought my Raptor 550, and it came with a GT 5.2 Flybarless controller. Mm-hmm. And I still have that controller on that heli. It flies great. But the first controller I had, the little LCD, it's got like a, I don't know, like a the LCD top that, you know, has the display on it. It had come loose. Like, it should have been double stick taped like together, and for some reason was a little bit loose. And I think I was generating a little extra vibration because that was not firmly mounted in the unit.
Yeah.
And because of that, I was getting this weird sort of like a tail. It was kind of a random tail click tick. It almost looked like a clock hand kind of just tick tick, you know, and it would tick around and it would go back and forth, and it was all I'm almost positive vibration, because once I sent it back to Tower Hobbies, who immediately replaced it with a new one, and I didn't have any other problems with it. So we're pretty sure that it was just that excessive vibration from that little top piece that wasn't firmly mounted was rattling and making confusing the controller.
Yeah, that'll happen.
I've heard of temperature changes causing a problem, but I've never experienced it. Do you know anything about that?
No, I haven't experienced it, seen anything, and we've got pretty much the extremes here in Utah. I mean, I've been flying out where it's, you know, single digits temperature and flying in the triple digit temperatures, and really haven't noticed much of a difference.
Okay, well,
at least in my stuff that I fly.
Yeah, I suppose it's possible, but I've never experienced that, but
nah.
I guess that's another thing to check to know about if you're having some drift problems. I'm guessing it happens because, you know, if you're in a warm car or a warm house, and then you go outside and it's 50 degrees colder outside, and you immediately start flying, everything's going to kind of be settling for a little while as plastics are expanding and contracting, and, you know, all kinds of weird stuff with the electronics could be going on that would cause some goofiness.
Yeah, and that's one thing we do when we go flying in the cold when it's winter time. We'll set it out on the table for a while before we fly it so that it can get acclimated to the cold weather, you know, just to make sure there isn't going to be any weird changes, you know, from pulling it straight out of your car, going straight to, you know, 8-degree weather flying. You might experience some weird vibrations and some weirdness in the flybarless units.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I got one more topic, and that is high temperature. Let's say your tail servo is hot.
Right.
Couple things that I can think of that would cause that, and one of them is back to setup. We'll go all the way back. We didn't talk about this when we did the setup, but one of the most critical parts of your setup is getting your tail servo frequency and center pulse right in your flybarless controller.
Right.
So
that's a huge one. And also binding. If anything's binding, your linkages or your tail rod, then that'll definitely cause your servos to overheat and also cause huge problems. You usually catch that before you get that far.
Yes, exactly. So check those things and make sure, like, I mean, if you're running a digital servo in analog mode, it's probably not going to be too good. But no. more critical is giving it too high of a frequency for your particular servo. You can literally burn one up on the bench before you even get out the door with it if you've got that set wrong.
Yeah.
So that's probably one of the more important things. Another thing would be too high a voltage. So just it depends. I mean, if you're running out of your flybarless controller and there's we'll assume that you're giving the right input voltage to your flybarless controller, you're probably okay. But it is possible to send too high a voltage to a tail servo. For example, running a high voltage system with a low voltage tail servo, you would experience some. You know, it might work. But the problem is it's not going to work for long, and it'll probably get hot in the meantime. So,
right.
And then the gains, if your gains are way too high, I'm assuming there's a point where it could be high enough where you're not really physically able to tell, but it's enough that's making that servo work extra hard when it doesn't have to.
Yeah.
But those are my thoughts on high temperature servos.
Yep, or just cheap servos too, or just a bad servo.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, do you lubricate your servos, or grease them or anything like that?
Nope, I just leave them the way they come from the factory. I mean, if I have to rebuild them, then yeah, I'll throw a little bit of the grease in there, but I just leave them the way they come from the factory.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've been doing. I started out buying much more inexpensive servos because that's what I could afford, and quite frankly, I wasn't willing to invest much money into the hobby until I knew for sure that I was going to enjoy it. But yeah. I'm aware that some of the more budget servos are going to have a lot less of that, where the higher end servos you buy, your Savoxes and your Futabas and Hitechs, and I'm not going to try and name every major servo manufacturer. You all know who you are. They all are more likely than not going to come to you, well greased and ready to run. But some of the lower end, your Turnagees and your knockoffs, your eBay servos and things like that, some of the ways they cut corners is by skipping out on those little things that you don't notice. So it's possible to have a under lubricated servo, which might run a little bit hot.
Right. And that's one thing I highly suggest is go with the best servo that you can for your tail. That'll make a world of difference in everything is your tail. Having a high speed quality servo, you'll be happier in the long run.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. And that's I believe exactly the same thing. If I spend any significant amount of money on a piece of electronics, it's probably going to be the tail servo. At least these days, the more I know, the smarter I get. So, but you can chase a lot of problems that look like they're gain related, and it's a cheap, slow, sloppy servo.
Yep. There's slop in the gears, or if the servo is just too slow, you're going to have a lot of issues with wags and hunting that you're going to be playing with gains and wondering what's going on here when it could be the servo to begin with.
Yep. So. Okay, one more thing while we're talking. These things keep popping into my head, so we're gonna have to figure out how to stop me from thinking here pretty soon so we can end the show. But
right.
there is one thing that we didn't talk about, and that is your tail assembly has to be butter smooth.
Right.
If you've got any notchiness or binding or tightness in your tail assembly, I mean the entire tail rotor, the pitch slider, all the way down to the servo horn, that I mean you should be able to disconnect your connection rod from the servo itself, and that whole assembly should like be buttery smooth, and you can almost shake your tail up and down and it should move under its own weight, sort of a thing.
Yeah. Yep. And that's one thing I do too is every few flights or once or twice a month I'll go and get that 3-in-1 silicone lube and go ahead and lube up my pitch slider and the tail rod linkage and all that. Make sure that it's all nice and smooth. There's no dust or dirt in there, so that it's clean.
Yeah, that's one thing I've been better at these days is the lubrication. I actually started using dry fluids. I don't know if you're familiar with dry fluids.
Yeah,
it's kind of expensive, but I got the gear lube for my gears, the plastic gears, like the main gear and all that. And the tail gears, and then I have the dry fluids, just the standard lubricant that I use on everything else, the main shaft and all the tail assembly. And I've been trying to remember every 10 to 15 flights of just re-adding some of that to keep everything nice and slippery.
Yep, it's a good idea for sure. Good maintenance tip.
Yeah, my 450 though, that thing, I don't even know if it's once I got it built, I don't think I ever, lubricated a thing on it. It still flies great, but now I'm doing it, but for a while I was abusing it because I wasn't. It's like buying a car and never changing the oil, It's like right. Eventually you're going to learn it's probably a good idea to keep up some maintenance.
Yeah, for sure.
So. Cool. Awesome. That's really all I had.
Awesome. Sounds good. Should we wrap this show up?
I think so. Otherwise, people are going to hate us if we just keep talking.
Right. Yeah, that's about all I've got to add. I mean, we can go on about this for a while and add more stuff into it, but we can save that for another show and do some more maintenance and tips for, you know, lubricating helis and setting up helis and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sounds good. And if anybody else has any ideas of things that we didn't talk about, we should you know, have them go to, you know, this show episode's going to get posted in the RC Hangar Time Facebook group, and go comment on this post whenever it comes out, and then let us know if you've got any other tips or ideas or tricks or anything like that. That'd be awesome.
There's also commenting enabled on the website as well, so it'll be posted on the website, and you can comment right on the website as well.
Cool.
So, cool. Sounds good.
You've been listening to RC Hangar Time, a podcast dedicated to the RC aircraft hobby. For more info, you can go to our website at www.rchangartime.com or look for us on Facebook at RC Hangar Time. And if you have any questions, please feel free to email us. For Mike, it's mike@rchangartime.com. For Wade, that's wade@rchangartime.com. Dustin, you guessed it, Dustin@rchangartime.com. And for TJ, it's crash@rchangartime.com. What the heck? Anyways, again, thanks for listening and keep flying.